This is the Multi-Faith Matters Podcast. I'm your host, John Morgan.
Awesome. We are recording. My name is John Moorhead, and I am with Multi-Faith Matters. And my special guest today is David Dashvin Keys. We've known each other for a number of years, and we're going to show folks what a Christian and pagan and respectful dialogue looks like, and hopefully help evangelicals understand a little bit more about paganism. David sent me a nice helpful bio, and I will begin the introduction by reading that. David Dashvin Keys, who tends to go by Dash, is a web developer for Georgetown University and an initiate priest in the Firefly House, an organization for Wiccans, witches, magic workers, and other pagans in the Washington, D.C. area. Dash was raised in a Jewish household, but their family is multi-faith, Jewish, and Christian. This instilled within them a sense that no one path has all the right answers. They encountered paganism in the mid-90s and formally dedicated themselves to the path in 1997. Since then, they've helped out on a variety of projects within the community, including the Pagan Newswire Collective, The Wild Hunt, Paganism's primary news focus website, and the Pathios.com Pagan Channel. These days, Dash is mostly focused on their studies at the Iliff School of Theology, where they're in their third year of the MDiv program. David, welcome to the podcast here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, I want to acknowledge evangelical concerns at this point. You know, we're in the Halloween season when this is being recorded. And last week I talked to Stephen Bradford Long, a Satanist, and this week I'm talking to a pagan. And some may be thinking, what in the world's going on with John Moorhead? But if they are, that's the point. We want to help evangelicals develop a greater sense of comfort in talking to not only people in other religious traditions, but especially those that they may feel uncomfortable with. And we recognize that at the outset. But I think through our conversation and what they're going to hear from you, even though they may not agree at the end of the day, that's fine. We recognize that, but at least we'll have some understanding. So I am sympathetic to what people may bring to the table. We just ask that they be patient as we go through that. As we begin our conversation, I'd like to begin with hearing how people got where they are. In brief, what's your story? How did you, we heard a little bit about that in the bio, but could you expand on
that? Yeah. So the bio covered sort of like the major hits. Was raised in a Jewish household, but there was a lot of Christianity present as well. My father's side of the family is Jewish, and my mother's side of the family as Christian. And so growing up, while our mom converted to Judaism, you know, as a part of the process, there was no, as I understand it, there was no expectation or requirement that she do so from my father, but there was a sense between them that raising the children, myself and my sister, in a household that had a single faith was important. And so at that time, she converted to Judaism, and yet there was still her parents, my grandparents, there was still her brother, my Uncle Dale, and his, later on, his wife and children. And so like, there was no way that we weren't all going to bump into the Christian members of our family just because our household was Jewish. And so I have distinct memories growing up. I would have been maybe 10 or 12, somewhere in that range, when one of my cousins was being, I think it was a baptism. And mom was savvy enough to hand us little pads of paper and told us to write down any questions that we had. And she was savvy to A, recognize that we would have questions, and B, that we shouldn't blurt them out in the middle of the ceremony. So if we wrote them down, we could save them till later. And so like from early on, we had a sense, my sister and I is the we there, we had a sense that people could believe different things and that that was okay. And my mother's faith journey, I think, also implied that people's belief, or at least their belief and practice, could change over a lifetime. And so when I was bar mitzvahed, in the synagogue that I grew up with, the attendance structure sort of falls away, at least when I grew where I was growing up. You were, I guess, considered either you were hooked and you were going to be a member of the synagogue and you were going to be there every Saturday or many Saturdays, or you were also going into high school at about that time and hopefully you would be back. So unfortunately, I suppose for that synagogue, I did not come back. The pressures of theater and band and chorus and all the things that I got involved in it in high school were greater than the gravity well that the synagogue was able to put out. And so that was sort of the end of my sort of involvement with that, with Judaism per se. I was already, though, I think, not feeling it all the way. The strong emphasis on the sort of masculine God presence in life was something that always did rub me the wrong way. So I was already sort of looking for the balance to that. And now as an adult, I can find that balance elsewhere in Jewish and Christian scripture. But at the time I was 14, I didn't know. I didn't have the critical thinking skills yet. So I left to sort of look for that elsewhere. Bumped into Buddhism for a little while, bounced around, learning a little bit more about Christianity. And eventually in about 96, 97, found my way toward paganism. And that's where I found a home. The explicit use of God and goddess language in Wicca specifically, but in paganism at large, there tends to be an overt understanding that the divine exists in multiple identities, in multiple genders, multiple preferences, different ideas about what is good and bad, all rolls into the divine, as opposed to the monotheistic framework that I had been raised in. And this different paradigm felt so much better to me. There are still pieces that I miss from my Jewish childhood. The singing, the congregational aspects are things that I do sort of wish paganism had, and we just don't, mostly for statistical population reasons. There's not enough of us in any one place a lot of the time. But so there's still things that I miss, things that I look at other traditions and say, oh, it'd be nice if I could have that. But I'm pretty happy where I'm at nevertheless.
Yeah, I appreciate hearing your story. I think maybe there's a tendency in across the board in all religious traditions, but I know evangelicals, we tend to focus so much on beliefs that it becomes, that's it, in the abstract. And we don't think about the person and the journey they've taken and how they arrive at where they are in their spirituality. So I think it's important for people to hear that. A lot of the beliefs of evangelicals about pagans are probably incorrect, stereotypical. Mm-hmm. They may have picked it up from books they've read by well-meaning Christians. It may have a lot of inaccuracies and so on in them. People claiming to be former pagans, you know, those are popular kinds of literature in the evangelical community. Help us get rid of some of these stereotypes. I know it's tough talking about any religious tradition that has a lot of complexity and diversity, but can you paint kind of a thumbnail sketch of what paganism is about?
Sure. So I think the first thing to say is that it's impossible, as you sort of were touching on there, it's impossible to define universal concepts about a whole group. I think for paganism, that's even more difficult because we are more of a collection of many faith practices rather than a sort of single, more uniform stream of thought. So you will find from one group to another, both of which might be using the label pagan, might be within the pagan community, but you'll find different holidays, different gods, different practices, a different set of ethical statements, all sorts of differences that in the ancient world, where a lot of our inspiration comes from, is because these were two different cultures. But in the modern world, we sort of do a little bit of lumping together in an effort to stand in solidarity with one another, and also to try and, in some ways, I think, try to check a few boxes that the sort of American culture of religion expects of religious groups, one of which is like a big collective noun under which you sit. And for us, that's pagan. I would recommend, with respect to trying to get at common themes, I'm going to touch on some of them from this book, but I actually have a book recommendation. It's called Seeking the Mystery. It's an introduction to pagan theology by Dr. Christine Hoff Kramer. I want to say it was published probably in the aughts, so it's not too out of date, but I have no idea if it's still in print or if it's going to be sort of an ebook type purchase or what. In the book, there are some common threads uncovered. And these are probably the closest you can get to statements that a lot of pagans are going to sort of nod their head at. And so it's not to say that all pagans will check all of these boxes, but if you check a bunch of these boxes, you might tend in the direction of paganism. Mm-hmm. One is various forms of non-monotheism. I'll expand that a bit. Mm-hmm. You don't find a lot of people who believe in one singular god in the pagan community. There are people who may believe that there is one creative divine energy and that we interact with it in different ways, that we see different parts of that one divine entity in the sort of elephant metaphor, where if you touch the tail, it feels like a rope. If you touch the ear, it feels like some kind of sail, you know, there, so that we encounter the divine through its parts. So you will run into that, where sometimes there is a monism to the within the community. But in general, what you get is different forms of polytheism, some forms of pantheism, and oddly, we skip over the singular and move immediately to a growing population of atheists within the pagan community, who are not as interested necessarily in the divine and the spiritual, supernatural aspects of the world and of the encounter that people like myself have with the world, but are still interested in some of these other checkboxes that we're about to cover. Mm-hmm. Number two in the list here, I don't think these are ordered in any specific level of importance, but the second point I have here is that a reverence for nature and for the body. We don't tend to think of the human position in the world as fallen or sinful. We are not perfect. We make mistakes. We are flawed, but those flaws do not rise to the level of sin necessarily. So the body is considered a sacred place, and the uses of the body, be it eating, sexuality, resting, play, work, etc., can all be avenues to find the divine. Similarly, nature is also a pathway toward the divine, being outside, encountering the forest, encountering the desert, the ocean, the sky, the land. These are ways to encounter the divine because we see it all around us as much as we see it within us. There is a real interest in pre-Christian myths and tradition. I think it's safe to say that this is typically of Europe, but not exclusively so. You'll find some Egyptian mythology involved in the pagan community. You might find some folks that are reaching to the ideas that are coming out of other places in Africa, although there is a lot of care in the best of circumstances. There's a lot of care to be respectful and cite your sources when you're dealing with cultures that have existent traditions in the modern era as well. And so that's where things get a little bit harder. You'll also find some people, especially if they are of Central or South American background, that are looking to the divine pathways of those parts of the world as well. But since paganism was defined out of a Eurocentric model, I think we still have that baggage with us. There's not a lot of, it's growing in different ways and it's stretching in different ways, but the core is still pretty European. Ritual practice is pretty stressed in private and in liturgical ways. So you go to, instead of going to a church, we might go to a public park or a grove in the forest, or we might gather on a beach, someplace like that. We don't tend to have buildings that we would go to, but we do still have calendars and holidays and the order of rituals that might take place on those holidays. But there's also a sense that you can do all of that on your own. Solitary practice is, I think, at this point, considered as valid as communal practice within paganism. And so that private religious experience and practice is also considered completely acceptable. We tend to see a personal experience of the divine as completely valid as a source of knowledge. We also tend toward a sense of virtue ethics. So instead of having hard and fast rules that are to be followed, we tend to base our ethical principles on a case-by-case basis. So we look at a situation, we analyze it based on the virtues that we might hold dear: honesty, hospitality, trustworthiness, courage, fortitude, whatever your virtue buzzwords are, and determine from those how we act in the world. Those checkboxes tend to be pretty common. There's some other ones. Pluralism is highly valued. There is some belief in magic and spellcraft and things of that sort, but those more lean almost toward the philosophy and maybe less the spiritual, at least as I think of these two things.
Okay, do you have the concern like we do? Whenever I try and define evangelicalism, I always find 20 other evangelicals are upset that I did a poor job. Do you have the same kind of challenge?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like there's so many people you put 10 pagans in a room and ask them a question, you get 13 opinions. Right, it's like right. Even at class one time, there were a few of us that are pagan mm-hmm. at the school. And we were talking amongst ourselves one time for about 5 minutes in a classroom before we realized that we'd left everybody else behind and everybody was staring at us like, what are you even? And we're like, sorry, it's a very small community. Like when we hit on an idea, we just run with it. So like, yeah, these are impossible things to nail down. Right. And it's just, you do the best you can and you hope that you don't make too many people angry.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your attempt, but unfortunately in this context, it's not only important to talk about what the positives, what you do practice mm-hmm. and believe, but also since we're talking about relating to the Christian community, there are a lot of stereotypes. Can you touch on some specific stereotypes that you hear that you'd like to dispel? Are there anything things that are common?
Yeah, the most obvious one is actually one that you already talked to Stephen Bradford Long about in the past. That is a link between evil and paganism and a link between paganism and Satanism. Mm-hmm. As I think Stephen spoke eloquently about in the past, Satanism is almost a humanistic pathway as opposed to one that is includes worship and devotion and magic and these sort of more pagan ideas. So I think that there's probably some overlap between what Stephen talks about with the Satanic Temple and the connections that people think of as evil there and the same connections to paganism and evil. There's centuries of a war of words against terms like pagan and witch and witchcraft and heathen. And I like to think that it started out just because people were doing things that were sort of different from other people. And so they were looked at as being a little strange, a little odd, but it was okay. Cause they were way over there. They were out in the heath, the heathens out in the heath. Right. And, but as times shifted and changed, some of those ideas went from being simply different to wrong. And then I think even longer over time, they went from being wrong to being evil. And so now I think the challenge in the modern era is to recognize that just because somebody a couple hundred years ago said that this was evil, we have the opportunity in the modern world to meet people where they are a little bit differently than we did in the past. And we can see, hopefully, that what they're doing is not necessarily a problem. I think there is a strong connection between ideas of animal sacrifice and paganism and witchcraft, especially in October. There's all sorts of stories that black cats are being adopted from shelters for the purpose of being sacrificed to some sort of dark ritual that takes place in this time frame. And that it's just not the case that is by and large, or I honestly don't think I've ever met anybody that has talked about sacrifice in the context of a living animal personally. Mm-hmm. I'm hedging my bets because, as we said earlier, it's hard to make universal statements. So I'm sure there is probably a group out there who does practice some form of that. You'll find it in other religious practice. So it's hard to say that no one does it, but I've never encountered it in 20 plus years. Everybody that I've spoken to is like, we just don't do that because of the negative stereotypes. So we sort of moderate our own practice because we want to make sure that there's some distance there. I also think there's a lot of confusion around a licentious stereotype and paganism. Because of the, as I mentioned earlier, that sense that what we do with our bodies is in some respects a sacred act. There is a connection then between that and a licentious form of hedonism that is, I think it's based on a misunderstanding, because licentiousness is sort of a sexual activity without any principles. I'm thinking of like Casanova sort of stories, right, where it's just like you don't have any grounding or basis for why you're making decisions about what you might be doing in this with your body in this way. Whereas I think what actually the stereotype is getting at is we just actually have a different set of principles based more around mutual consent and an understanding that all parties involved in a sexual way should be cognizant, informed, understanding, and consenting. And once you have those boxes checked, once that's the way you encounter things, our principles say that you are probably okay. And we don't have as much of the same way of thinking about it. So that breeds misunderstanding. There's no way around that. People look at some folks who have a different way of understanding their life and lifestyle and are going to look at that and say, I don't get that. And we get into that different versus wrong versus evil. We're okay down at the different level. That's fine. We are different. That's great. The problem is that some people edge it into wrong or even evil. And then I think the last one that I could thought of earlier, I was sort of prepping some of these questions in my mind, was there. I have run into a lot of people that are very concerned that pagans are out to convert the masses, that we have some sort of pagan agenda that we're going to impose upon young, impressionable people. And to my knowledge, we don't. Proselytizing evangelism is not a practice that's considered part of the religious concept within paganism. If people find their way here, great. If people don't, just as great. Mm-hmm. I've encountered a lot of people who, even with children, aren't really raising their children in their own faith, preferring to allow their children to explore and maybe come to a pagan pathway in their adulthood, or if they find their way to a different path in their adulthood, that's also great. Like there's not even necessarily a sense that that we pass this generationally, because it's again more up to the individual and that idea of what matters to you as a person. And that is in conflict in some ways with the idea of evangelism. So there really isn't a pagan agenda. There isn't a group of people out there that are trying to go around to schools and convert children or meeting in dark basements, plotting global domination. None of that.
Right. Well, you've talked about the stereotypes and the fears and all of this, and that kind of naturally leads to my next question. There's not a whole lot of conversation, dialogue, relationships between Christians and pagans. But from the Christian side, there's only a handful that I can think of. Some colleagues like Phil Wyman, who's done some great work in the UK and in Salem. My colleague Paul Lewis Metzger in Portland has had a pagan come and speak to his world religions class. But because of that fear and those stereotypes and the association with evil by Christians in regards to pagans, there's just this desire to keep separate, that somehow we're going to be compromised or spiritually contaminated. And what's interesting and tragic at the same time is those of us who risk, if you will, getting close and having these conversations, sometimes we are perceived as being compromised and corrupted. So it's a tough road to walk, to try and be prophetic and be ahead of the tribe, and yet not so far that you're viewed as an outsider, can kind of be a challenge. So that's our perspective and why there aren't too many. From the pagan side, I've experienced some warm receptivity from some folks online and a lot of negativity at the same time, a lot of pushback. What is it about some of the pagan experience with Christians or Christianity that prohibits us from having more productive conversations in the public square, where we all have to figure out how to get along and live where we disagree?
I think the first one that comes to mind is a lot of pagans come to this pathway, come to these communities later in life. Sometimes it's later than I did. I was in my late teens. Other times people are encountering it in their, you know, early teens, late 20s, whatever. But regardless, I still think it's fair to say that the vast majority of pagans are not likely to have been raised in a pagan faith. That's changing. Some of that, I think, even with my earlier statement about how I know a lot of people who aren't raising their children in the faith, I know others who are. So going back to lacking in universal statements. So it is changing. I know of a few people off the top of my head that were raised pagan. But most of us came from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Some people may have been unaffiliated, and so they found their way to paganism from the ranks of the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, the nuns. But I think a lot of people came from another faith community where they were not accepted or where they didn't find themselves feeling welcomed. And when that occurs in America, in the United States, based on our population statistics, it's very likely that that came from some form of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so it is, I think there is some tension between people who came from Christianity and may have some lingering religious or spiritual trauma from that experience, then encountering Christians who want to engage in dialogue. And there might be some thinking like, well, you weren't interested in dialogue with me when I was in the pews with you. Why should I be interested in dialogue with you now when I've found a new spiritual home?
Right.
I do also think that, as is the case, especially with more conservative expressions of Christianity, the feelings towards the LGBTQ community, what I would just umbrella as the queer community, does create some tension as well. Paganism has a lot of work to do in that arena, especially within and among trans identities, but it has for quite some time been very accepting of different forms of sexual orientation, even if we're now sort of figuring out the gender identity question as well. As a result, I know there's a lot of people who were coming from a sort of conservative form of Christianity and queer, and now they've left and they found their way to paganism because we have tended to be a more welcoming place for those points of view. I'm trying to be as political as possible. So people find their way here from the queer community to us. And then, similar to the first response, they're also looking at like, well, you didn't love me as your neighbor when I was in the pews. Why should we? And you question the validity of my way of life or my gender identity or sexual orientation, whatever these vectors of intersectionality are. And that quick, why have that dialogue now? Mm-hmm. I do also think that the evangelism piece is undeniably worrisome to pagans. I think there's a fear that Christians who are coming to us to have a conversation are simply trying to learn our lingo and learn what ways they can then become better evangelists to pagans. And then secondarily, I think there's a fear that there is always an evangelistic part of the conversation, that even if the conversation has nothing to do with evangelism per se, that when statements come out and start saying things like, I believe, or I think, or Jesus tells me, etc., that there's always that ulterior motive of evangelism. And so every moment you spend with a Christian might be the moment that somehow convinces you to leave your pagan faith. And it's like, well, I guess for me, if you find beauty in Christianity, go there. Like, that's totally fine. So I have less of a concern of that personally, but I do know that other people have evidenced a fear of that language, especially a fear of the unifying language that Christianity sometimes brings to it, of we can all get along, and maybe we can't. There are going to be things that we just disagree on. It doesn't mean we can't get along in spite of, but to imply sometimes that we're going to reach a unified understanding of all things is not usually the way pagans right. tend to view the world.
Yeah. I appreciate all that. You know, I just want to point out for viewers that it is possible. I mean, you and I were privileged. I had a great time when the Parliament of World Religions was in Salt Lake City. We managed to get, I don't know, I wish Guinness had known about what we were doing, the Guinness Book of World Records. I think we had the largest group of pagans with a number of you know, conservative Christians there. Mm-hmm. We had dinner together and we had a great time. And it was interesting to watch the dynamics, because some of my group, Multi-Faith Matters, our grant team that was meeting, were very comfortable and some were very uncomfortable. So, but that's okay. You know, it can't be done. But you talk about the concern over, first of all, let me say, I think I want evangelicals to hear, it's not only Christians that have angst about relationships and conversations with pagans. It goes both ways. And my hope is that we would have not only understanding, but sympathy for the angst on the other side of the conversation. Mm. And especially at a time when evangelical churches are losing people and the ranks of the nuns are growing, maybe it's time to look in the mirror and have some self-critical conversations. That's my hope. I don't know if it'll happen. Yeah. But let's you and I unpack a little bit with this next question. You've done a great job with, I don't know if you're crafting it this way, but your responses lead naturally into my next question. You know, you talked about concerns that pagans have about an ulterior motive in regards to evangelism. And I and some colleagues, we've written some pieces on Pathios saying, look, our evangelism, we can't do the bait and switch. We can't have relationships with people, view them simply as objects for evangelism. And if they don't convert, we just cut bait and we move on. We do that all the time. We don't value people in and of themselves, regardless of their spiritual choices. Mm. You in the past have pursued an interfaith approach, and you even express an interest in the kind of thing that I do, which is more multi-faith engagement or religious diplomacy, where we're not only talking about similarity, but we're also talking about our differences, our deep differences, and keeping those on the table at the same time and building trust by talking about those differences, but also leaving space at times for persuasion. It doesn't necessarily mean evangelism and this kind of thing, but I think whether it's in politics or whatever it is we value in our lives, we like those people that we care about to say, hey, man, I found this. This is cool. Maybe you'd like it too. You express an interest in the possibility of a multi-faith or religious diplomacy approach. Are you still on that point? Or have you kind of, it's a bit of controversy in the pagan community. I remember at the Wild Hunt comment section of that, it got really lively. Or what are your thoughts on that today?
Yeah, I think I will admit that I find the idea of multi-religious space and dialogue to be fun. Like, I enjoy that sort of interaction.
Right.
I do think it's easier to build trust and it's easier to have a more authentic relationship when you're speaking with each other honestly, when you're not doing the sort of bait and switch that you just said not to do. You know, so when we are upfront about the ways that we're different, when we are upfront about the things that matter to us at our core, and maybe even things that we're not open to persuasion about, it does is it allows us to settle in on the things that we can talk about a little bit. This is not to say that we can't touch on our differences. Obviously, I think that's a fascinating conversation.
Right.
So I do think I'm a little bit less interested in the idea of persuasion around some core pieces of human experience. There are things that I'm not going to budge on. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm not interested in having the conversation, but it's definitely more of an agree to disagree
right.
at the end of that conversation. That said, there's a universe of things that matter to other people that I may not have a formed opinion on. And that's where this sort of conversation can be truly valuable, because somebody can bring to my attention a detail or a facet or a news story or a documentary or a spiritual book, not even necessarily scripture, just a book on religion, whatever the case may be, that they hand to me that allows me to sharpen and hone my own thinking about myself and allows me to grow as a person. It might even change my mind on a matter that I hadn't really formed a strong sense or opinion on. And those are the sorts of things that we cut ourselves off from if we completely divorce ourselves from the sort of conversation, somewhat like what we're having now. I mean, this is a pretty focused, more of an interview sort of deal.
Right.
But you know, the people that are watching this are hopefully encountering the sort of information that I'm talking about here, things that maybe shake up their point of view a little bit and might cause them to rethink or at least give somebody the benefit of the doubt if they happen to bump into a pagan at a PTA meeting or what have you.
Yeah, I think that that stance of openness and humility, which is a essential part of religious diplomacy, is something that I know evangelicals struggle with. The assumption is that we come to the conversation with all the stuff that the other person needs to hear and embrace, and there's no real sense of back and forth. And so one of the things I hope to impart to my religious community is I have confidence in my beliefs and practices, but at the same time, I can be wrong. I'm wrong about a whole lot of things in my life. Whatever that, and I'm able to recognize it, hopefully the older I get. But even in these kinds of multi-faith conversations, there needs to be an openness and a back and forth and humility. And with that humility, I think, comes more confidence. What's amazing to me is evangelicalism is based upon confidence, right? Evidence that demands a verdict. We've got the truth with a capital T, and yet we seem so frightened and timid when it comes to our place in the public square and in multi-faith conversations. And if you're confident in where you are spiritually, it seems to me you ought to be doing more of this rather than less of it. But
yeah. Well, and the places that I think get so associated with evangelical forms of Christianity, especially conservative forms of evangelical Christianity, end up in the arena of politics so often, and not how someone lives their life. Not that politics isn't involved therein, but we end up, American culture in general, I think, does sort of end up associating evangelical Christianity, conservative Christianity, with that sort of confidence and egotism in a form of political arena. And yet I agree, I've met many more conservative evangelical Christians, even liberal evangelical Christians, who are very unsure about the interfaith conversation. And sometimes it just comes down to practice. The more you do it, the better you're going to get at it, and right, the more comfortable you're going to be.
Yeah. One thing that might be helpful for pagans to hear in our conversation is, again, that desire to evangelize is so central to evangelical assumptions, identity, all of it, that when you don't do it, you somehow feel like you're being not a good disciple, not a good disciple.
Many times, right,
when folks see the kind of work that we do at Multi-Faith Matters, whether it's myself or my colleagues, I've gotten actively criticized. You blew an opportunity. I mean, because the view is within evangelicalism, man, if they don't hear and respond, they're going to hell, and you've just messed up your eternal destiny. So for evangelicals, the stakes are high. That doesn't justify the objectification of people and, excuse me, the means to an end and all of that. But that's the rationale that goes on. And so what we're trying to do with these kinds of conversation is create space that it's not just about evangelism, that it's about a more holistic approach and way to understand and relate to other human beings. Is there anything that is as central that they're afraid of compromise in paganism, or is it more laid back as it appears to be to us outsiders? I hate to put you on the spot, but that just kind of
came out. That's fine. Yeah. I think that the key feature of most forms of paganism that I've encountered really is pluralism, which can appear laid back because it doesn't always question the beliefs, the practices, the politics of others. But as we see in, you know, the current status of the US elections and everything else, a pluralistic point of view leads you to being firm when others are seeking to monopolize the conversation in one way or another. And so I think that what we're running into is a sort of a core point of disagreement between these two communities, yours and mine, because mine sees everybody as being fine to do what they seek out, whether that is Christianity, Buddhism, paganism, whether they're Jain or Hindu. You find your way to the pathway that matters to you, even if that pathway is non-theistic or atheistic. That's also fine. There is, though, I think, a perception on my side of the conversation, on the pagan side, that the monopolistic ideas, the universalizing ideas, are in conflict with that pluralism. And that's when you do, I think, see people on my side of the conversation finding a way to exert ourselves, not to say everybody has to be pagan, but rather you collectively, not you, John, you all don't get to tell us what to do. This, of course, I think creates a danger within the pagan community, because then we start saying that to ourselves sometimes. Somebody else in the community says, I've found a really great thing and I'd like to share it with you all. And everybody else says, you're not the boss of me. Go away. So that countercultural, that almost anti-authoritarian mindset, I think, sometimes is a double-edged sword for us.
Right. I appreciate your candor on that. You know, we've only just scratched the surface, but I hope this is, you know, shed some new light for, I don't think a whole lot of evangelicals have done much actual encounter with pagans. So I hope we can at least open that door. I'll include in the notes to go with it some suggestions for resources, including the one you mentioned at the beginning, but do any others come to mind for you that folks might want to look at as a firsthand information source?
You've also, you've mentioned Pathios.com a few times. Pathios has a pagan channel. So while folks viewing this are at Pathios reading content that is in their own bailiwick, feel free to hit that menu up and slide over to the pagan channel, or any of the other channels for that matter. the writers there tend to be, I was there too, so I'm going to use we in that case. Like, we all sort of realized that we were in a multi-faith space, but I think we also realized that the channels are not always overlapping. And there would be some back and forth in the comment sections now and again, but in general, I think we all found our place and sort of stuck there. So maybe break out of the bubble a little bit and check out the pagan channel. Another book recommendation, it was written by an NPR reporter, Margot Adler. This one is a little dated. It's called Drawing Down the Moon. And that is very focused on the history of paganism in the United States. So there are other books out there that talk about the history of paganism in other parts of the world. But Adler's book is a good one, even though it's missing the last 15, 20 years or so. I think it was a 90s book, if I remember correctly. And then the last option isn't really one for 2020, but once 2021 rolls around, there are events, usually in the fall, called Pagan Pride Days. And they're public, they're outside, usually in parks or on college campuses, places where if you're an evangelical person, you could walk through it and no one would know that you're sort of unsure about what's going on. So you can just sort of wander through, maybe see what's at the stores, see what kind of organizations are located. It's a little dangerous for me to bring it up, I suppose, because there have been protests at Pagan Pride Days by certain groups. But hopefully, just don't do that. Go sort of mingle, and you might get the opportunity to, in real time, sort of see what is going on a little bit in your corner of the world with respect to the pagan community. And that could be a way to bump into some other places, some other organizations. Maybe there's a coffee talk that gets advertised there that you could slide into and casually sort of broach the multi-religious space in your own way, in your own time.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, unfortunately, evangelicals do protests in other people's sacred spaces really.
Yeah, it happens.
My hope is that my audience doesn't. So
that's my hope too.
We'll opt for the coffee conversations and those kinds of things. And there's always online forums and so on.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Well, my guest has been David Deschvin-Keys. David, thank you so much I appreciate you taking out the time and a busy schedule.
Happy to.
Yeah, I'll let you know, and we will continue this conversation another time. Thank you again.
Great. Yeah. Happy to. Let me know how I can be of help.
Will do.